Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, the Gorgeous Kitchen. And today our fabulous guest is Sarit Packer, and we are sitting downstairs in her third establishment, Honey and Smoke. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a bit about you. I have a book in front of me, not your first. It's Honey and Co. At Home Middle Eastern Recipes from Our Kitchen. Our being yours and your husband's.
Yeah.
Itamar Srulevich. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your food journey.
It's quite a kind of round the, you know, going full circle round the bend kind of thing. So mine personally, my parents are actually English and they left London before I was born and moved to Israel. So I was born to quite an English household living in Israel. A lot of our food was kind of traditional English, and what happens in Israel is that you start going out quite early and eating at a lot of friends' houses and with friends and restaurants and stuff, and they would come to you and we'd have these whole discussions about how strange our food was versus how strange their food was to me, because some of them were Egyptian origin or Tunisian origins, Moroccan. There's quite a lot of different cuisines within just in your regular classroom, in your friends group. So I got very interested quite early on in all these different flavors, and then quite a lot in going out to a lot of the Arab restaurants in Israel, which do kind of the whole food of the Middle East in its, you know, first incarnation. And that was always lovely. And I got very obsessed with food and baking and decided it was going to be my career, and thought that the best thing would be to come to Europe and learn it, because actually there wasn't that much pride in local Israeli food at the time that we did that. So the idea was, let's go back to Europe and see. I thought I'd do France first. But
classical patisserie,
yes,
training.
Yes, I thought I would do the proper classical kind of kitchen. I had this fantasy in my head, but I tried to study French and I'm not very good with it, to say the least. I was pretty bad at my studies, and quite a few discussions with people said that the whole masculine feminine thing in French kitchens would be a problem for me, especially if the language was an issue as well. And that kind of freaked me out a bit, and I thought, well, I've got the British passport, I've got family here that I could start somewhere. And I came here to...
And you spoke the language.
And I spoke the language, which very much helps. So, yeah, so I decided to try here. And I went to a chef's college, which sadly doesn't exist anymore, but was amazing, because it was part of the Conran group. And it trained in a kind of active restaurant. So it was called The Apprentice, and we had a restaurant that people would sit in and eat, and we would cook for them, and then we would have theoretical classes. So it was so amazing. It was
fantastic.
Yeah, because it's all this kind of aspect of understanding what a kitchen would be like, and very kind of classical, modern European and French food, a lot of training on all the basics. And then I got a job straight in one of the Conran shops in the Orrery, which after I had joined, we got a Michelin star as well. So I was learning this proper fine dining, amazing regimented kitchen thing of like 16-hour days and kind of crazy kitchens. And I loved it, but it's also quite wearing on your body. And after a couple of years, I was like, I think I need to stop for a second and think exactly where this is all going, with the idea of really stopping for maybe 6 months and then resuming. So I went back home. Back home is Israel. And the weirdest thing happened was that once I had gone there, and because I had worked for a couple of years in a London restaurant, in a fine dining as well, everyone wanted to give me management positions. Whereas I had only left here as like a demi-chef, you know, it's a, you know, chef de partie kind of level. But everyone was saying like, okay, run this kitchen. And there was no other way to do it. So I kind of fell into a sous chef position straight away in an Italian restaurant, again, because we were not looking towards Israel. We were looking very much to Europe. So Italian cuisine, that's where I met Itamar. We were working in the same kitchen, and though not love at first sight at all, it was kind of a slow burn. We kind of did end up together somehow. And then I worked in a few other places in Israel, and we thought, actually, we want to come back to Europe. And we came back in 2004 together, and just said, we're going to do 6 months in London and then do the rest of my trip that I was going to do the first time around, France, and then go to Spain. And we had gotten married, so he had the passport. It was like easy, you know, all of Europe was in front of us. But that's not what happened. We kind of got, it took a long time to settle back in London, took a long time to make friends, it took a long time to get bank accounts and, you know, all these kind of boring things that you need to live. And then after 6 months, you're like, there's no way we're leaving now. We've just started to, you know, just started to understand what's going on.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and you've invested, you know, in being here. And it's, as you say, it's not as easy, especially when you're not a student anymore. It's not as easy to just pick up and go.
No.
I mean, it's possible, but, you know.
It was possible, but it was really like this kind of idea of, this is going to be so expensive to do again. And it took us so long. We had just started to kind of settle into something. So the idea of getting up and going again was a bit too much. So we stayed. We ended up working in the same place again, the Oxo Tower. Worked there for a good long time. And I kind of fell more and more into pastry there. Itamar was doing a lot of kind of big restaurant, you know, dining at the Brasserie. They could feed up to 400 people a night. It's a busy kind of kitchen. A friend was leaving Ottolenghi and said to Itamar, why don't you come and take over my job here? And we didn't know much about it then. And it wasn't that much. This was a long time ago. So there was not that much to know. There were two branches at the time. And Itamar went and got the job of managing Notting Hill. And then he said to Yotam, my wife's a pastry chef. Why don't you meet? Maybe you need her for something. And they had just opened the bakery there. And Yotam kind of, and I spoke and I joined there, and somehow we managed to create this job that was fun for me because I got to go between the different shops and help set up the bakery and all the pastry sections and kind of change, you know, things that I could get involved in. And that was
fun. You sort of grew with Ottolenghi.
I think, you know, it's a mix. Yes, in a way, yes, but we also had been chefs for maybe 10 years by the time we joined there, so it wasn't like a first job. But it was nice to join a company that was still quite small and see it change and evolve and stuff like that. And also what it did, which we always say, in a way, it kind of opened our eyes to the fact that you can be a normal person and own a restaurant, because until then, we had only worked in these, you know, Jay Shiki's, which is owned by this big group, or Oxo Tower, which is owned by Harvey Nicks, or Conran Group and the Ori and all of that. So until then, all our examples were big money people that owned these restaurants. And suddenly we were joining a group of people that were just people like us. And they had opened this and they started small and they were slowly growing. And that was quite inspirational in that point of view. So I think there's a good combination of things.
As well as, you know, Ottolenghi being Israeli and Middle Eastern food, and seeing that really, you're like, oh, right, because you'd always been looking at Europe. You're like, oh,
yes,
right,
but
people
I,
can love this, you know.
It's true as well. To a degree, it's true. I don't think the food in Ottolenghi was very Middle Eastern. Mm. I still don't think it's very Middle Eastern. I think it's really interesting. It's very Asian. It's got all these mixes. What it does have is that sensibility of color, of beauty, of abundance, and that was very inspiring. So I don't think maybe the it was so much about learning about Middle Eastern food there, but it was more learning about how things should look, how it can be beautiful. And in time, things also moved maybe to, I mean, Sami Tamimi, that's the, you know, the head chef of the group there, is Arab, and, you know, his food is beautiful and delicious. And actually, just eating his food is like the most delicious thing. And that kind of reminds you that this food can be restaurant worthy.
RadioGorgeous.com.
But I was very much pastry based there until they were going to open Noppi, which is a restaurant in Soho, and they asked if I would take it on as a kind of project to open with, I mean, to help them open it. That we did that together, and that was an amazing experience, quite crazy, really big scale restaurants and a good learning curve. By then, Itamar had left to start looking for a place for us. So it was good to know that I would learn a lot of how to open a place.
And what's the drive to open a place of your own?
I never really had the drive, but Itamar very much did. I had had a business in Israel for a while, and I found it quite hard and quite... I was probably too young when I opened it. I opened it with a partner, and we tried our best, but we just didn't manage to kind of get it off the ground. So I was a bit scarred by that whole experience of owning your own thing.
It's a huge responsibility.
It is, and it really, really scared me. And Itamar, ever since I've known him, has wanted his own thing. And we had a lot of discussions about this. And at the time, we kind of said, well, you stop working and start looking, and I'll continue with Ottolenghi. And if you don't find anything, or if it's very small and you handle it yourself, then I'll stay where I was. I was, you know, quite happy. Everything was good, you know. So at some stage it was clear to us, and as time progressed, that we wanted something that was ours. And I think it wasn't about anything other than that. You just want to create something. And we, you know, we by choice don't have kids, and but our kind of enjoyment is what we can create, an atmosphere, or how it is. And we really wanted to feel if we could do something that felt like us completely. And that was it. So that was kind of, you know, we just said, we'll just throw everything in and we try. And it was the best time and the worst time for other people, because it was the financial downturn here, and just after 2008 that we started to like collect our heads on the business plan. So by 2012 we signed and opened and stuff like that. So we had like a few years where everyone was not spending too much money and shops were going empty, so we could afford rent. It's all these sad things for a lot of people, but it helped us open a business. And that's what we did. So we just said, really small, just me and Itamar, go into the kitchen. We just start cooking, do what we do, and the rest we'll figure out. And that's what it was for a while.
Did you have to figure out what the vision was? Because it seems like you've worked in these huge kitchens, Michelin star, very high standard, and a high corporate standard as well. And then also to someone else's vision, you know, or just pastry, as you were saying. So I see that, like, I can see that there were limitations in terms of what you were doing, and so the desire to express yourself. But then it's like, okay, so, and we'll keep it small. It's a huge responsibility, just us two, because that way, you know, if it fails, it's just us two. We'll go back to work.
Yeah.
But where, you know, sort of how did that vision evolve?
We knew that we wanted to cook food that feels real to us. So we were kind of stepping as far away from techniques and equipment and stuff like that. It was more about going back to cooking. And what we said was, because this, we were looking for a while for this grill restaurant, which ended up being this place we're sitting in now, but, you know, 7 years later. So we looked for this grill restaurant because that was really the passion. You know, everything in the Middle East is a big grill fire. You put some chicken on it, you eat the chicken, it's delicious. It's kind of, that's what we were looking for.
Sort of lusty,
yeah, like really
sensual,
kind of a bit dirty way. Yeah. We were probably doing all the, you know, in our heads we were kind of in this place a long, long time ago, but we couldn't find the right location. We didn't have money for proper extraction. All of this is really expensive and difficult, and we didn't have the contacts for things like charcoal. Like, it's ridiculous, but we just didn't have any of that. And when we found 25 Warren Street, the location of Honey & Co., we just walked in and it just felt like a home. It was a family-owned business before. The people used to live upstairs, the family, and the parents used to run this Italian deli downstairs. It felt like that. The kitchen was workable. It wasn't amazing, but it was there and workable. We could start like almost within the kind of next week to start cooking. And we just said, fine. So we cook our food. It feels like a home. We cook our home food. And all it needs to be is kind of an extension of people coming over for dinner. It's a very small room. They get to sit down, they get to eat this food, and that's all we did. We started with dishes that Itamar would make us for dinner, pastries, cakes that I would make for us for, you know, weekends and stuff, and that's slowly kind of evolved. And then we both started playing more, reading more about kind of things that maybe were unique, traveling more to the Middle East and seeing things that, you know, were exciting. And but mostly it is this food that we kind of saw in all these houses that we grew up. And Itamar has an Egyptian heritage and Yemeni, so kind of mixed Yemeni-Egyptian. So the food of his kind of, you know, diaspora, I suppose. And everything that was delicious is what we cooked. And some things were more delicious than others, and they stayed, and they still get served today. And others kind of fell along the way. We tried to do kushri, which is a big Egyptian kind of street food. We couldn't get that to work at the time, but you know, now there's a kind of fast food chain that does kushri. So things change, but at the time, London didn't have a lot of kind of, you know, there were the kind of standard places of Edgware Road that have been there forever. But what we were doing, this kind of more homey, not restaurant food, didn't really exist. So we were just playing more and more with that. And it, luckily for us, caught on really fast. And we just kind of started like, growing in a very unintentional way. We kind of, you take one person, another person, another person. Before too long, we were, I think we were about 20 people working just in Honey & Co. just to kind of cater for the craziness, which is when we started looking for this location. But again, like, it took us a couple of years to find the first one. It took us another couple of years since we decided to take another restaurant, a bigger restaurant, to actually find this and sign for a lease. So in the meantime, somehow our little deli happened because we couldn't get the paperwork signed on this place fast enough. So, you know, this shop opposite the road from Honey & Co. became available, and we were like, hey, we simply can't, because we don't even know if this, you know, if Great Portland is going to work out. And we just said, that's it, we're just going to take this place, even if it's just our office. And it was our office, and then we opened the deli upstairs, and then that became its own little kind of monster. You know,
took on a life of its own.
It did. And then we managed, as soon as we had signed that, and we were like, okay, let's think, this came through as well, Great Portland. So within the same 6 months, we had opened both places, which was a big, big thing for us to do as a company. So basically, we trebled the size of our employees. So we're now almost 70 staff within a very short amount of time. So quite a big growth.
That's a challenge,
yeah.
Fair.
It was a challenge, yeah.
Did the boldness and... Because it's clear to me that you found a lot of joy in the original Honey & Co., of you two cooking your food together.
Yeah.
Did you expect that? Did you expect to love it so much? Because clearly that love has, you know, given you the boldness to be like, well, we love this, we'll love that. More.
I think, well, maybe. It's an interesting question. I think we loved suddenly being interactive with the customers, because I don't know, like, if anyone knows this, but chefs very rarely get to meet anyone they feed, because we're stuck in these big kitchens.
The big white hat on.
Yeah, you know, it's very official. You hardly ever get to chat to the customers. They don't know who you are. You definitely don't know who they are. And because Itamar was doing a lot of the front of house and serving customers, he really got to know everyone by name as well. And I would come up, or some of them would come down to the kitchen, a lot of them still do, and just have a chat or stuff like that. And we enjoyed that part of it, but there is a stage in which physically you just can't do all the work alone. And you've got to hire people to help you. Otherwise, you would, you know, it's not possible. There's only so much a body can take. And we were, you know, there at 5 o'clock in the morning to bake all the breads and stuff like that. Like, you can't do it forever. So we started off with taking friends to work with us, people that had worked with us before and wanted, you know, asked us if they could join. And we're kind of very trepidatious with every addition, because you're not sure if it's a crazy mistake or if it's a good thing to do. But every person, you know, was extremely useful in showing us also how to grow. So the kind of idea of the other places was not so much out of joy, but out of necessity, because we had these amazing people working. And at some stage, they want to grow, you know. They want to become a manager ahead, and they had to, like, kick us out in a kind of, you know, in a polite way, kind of slowly push us out the door, because we were kind of, in a way, being more destructive to the business than a kind
of
regular routine. Too hands-on, too, like, involved, too, like, wanting to play with this or change this, and every second adjusting. But actually, in a restaurant, customers like to know what they're going to be able to eat. They want to, if they came 2 months ago and they had something that was delicious, they want to come back and eat it again. They don't want it to be different every day. We would change, at the beginning, we were changing menus daily. Then we were changing them weekly. Then slowly we went to monthly. Now we change in a quarter. So we give it a good season and then we change. But it's funny, you kind of don't think about it when you are in the kitchen and playing and you're like, let's try this today, you know. Anyway, so they started to, like, slowly want us to get out of the way.
Pull back a bit.
Yeah. So as we were doing that, we got bored. We wrote the first book, and then we, you know, wrote the first book, then we wrote the second book, did quite a bit of touring with the books, and then we're like, okay, we need another project to sink our teeth in. So this is how the other places came about.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.
Can we talk about At Home a little
sure.
bit, about the book? Because I love how it is organized.
Yes.
Because it is organized around your guys' lives
yes.
as well.
Yes.
And it starts off with, there's four sections, well, five sections, for us two, for friends, for the weekend, for a crowd, And then there's a section on For the Kitchen. And yeah. then what's fabulous is then it's cross-referenced
yeah.
with what the things are, by sort of by vegetarian meals, snacks and dips, main meals, breakfast, etc.
Yeah.
So it's you can look at it
in
either
any
way,
kind of,
yeah, which is very, very helpful. And also throughout the book are stories of your guys' lives.
Yeah.
That's quite sweet.
Yeah. But this is always kind of the part of it, and this started from the first book and carried into here, which everything is almost like a diary. So Honey & Co, the cookbook is, you know, is about a record of a year of opening a restaurant, everything that happens in it, how you would build a menu, how you would think about Middle Eastern food, how we thought about it in terms of setting it all up.
As well as the drama of restaurant
everything,
life.
Like things exploding and, you know, all of this stuff, all the staff that helped us open, everything like that, which was really fun. And then when we got a chance to look back at it, we were like, this is amazing. Let's continue that. So the baking book is a diary in a day. So it follows a day from breakfast, lunch, you know, breakfast, 11, lunch, dinner. So we like to follow, and we thought actually with this book, originally it was going to be about our deli, but as we started writing it, we were clear that actually it's more personal. And we just thought, what applies to people? There's some food we love to eat, but we wouldn't specifically cook if guests came over. It's just something we and I, you know, Itamar and I like to eat. It's a bit rubbish, or not rubbish, but
or
you can eat, sit on a sofa.
Yeah.
You can have a bowl and a spoon and sit on a sofa, and you don't have to be dressed up. But then sometimes we want to go all out. Someone's coming and you want to super impress them. So we started thinking in those terms and started building that. And then the stories are part of that. So it's almost that's almost like a diary of how two chefs end up at home and, you know, what that means.
Yes.
Yeah? So it's a lot about the stories as it is about the recipes, yeah.
I would say there's some very, very sweet stories in there. I don't want to give them away. I want people to be
you
able
to
delve
read
in.
Some of them,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Be able to delve in themselves. And so with this book, you guys are doing a demonstration is
yep.
coming up, a breakfast demonstration. I'm going to give all the information. It'll be on our website, but it's at the Good Housekeeping Institute. It's during the London Book and Screen Week, which is coming up, and the event is on Eventbrite. And we will have all the details on the website. I want to thank you so much, Saree, for talking to Radio Gorgeous today.
Thank you so much.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com